Hello everyone, welcome back to the show. And today's guest is Lorien Fenton. How are you going, Lorien?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, Peter. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thank you for coming back on. I've actually been on your show a couple of times, which is MUFON LA's radio show, isn't it?
No, it's actually California MUFON Radio, and it's on Inception Radio Network on Wednesday evenings here in the US at 8 p.m. Pacific and 11 Eastern. And it's a great show, and I've had you on, I've had Mary Rodwell on. I'm trying to get all of you Aussies on my show.
There
It's
seems to
been
be a
great
lot
fun.
going on everywhere at the moment, too.
Oh yes, I'm a conference producer and I'm a radio talk show host and I'm some kind of weird experiencer. We're not even sure what kind of experiencer I am. So that's what makes it so intriguing is because I didn't end up in this field like you did. I ended up here because I had super soldier and mind control experiences
Well, let's
that
go into
took me.
that because this is where it's different. It's very different in terms of you were sort of, I guess, brought into this through a, everyone's brought into this a different way, but how was it specifically for you in how you got into this field?
Well, it goes way back because I would say I'm an empath and I'm fairly psychic. And I grew up my entire life thinking that everybody could see houses appearing on the road, watch people walk through the walls in their bedroom when they're having an out-of-body experience, that they could read people's minds and know, my relatives, my grandmother and I used to have this amazing kind of telepathic communication. I've come to find out that it was actually a form of remote viewing. It isn't necessarily telepathic. It was more like I could concentrate on her where she was, and I would know what she was doing because I'd almost see through her eyes what she was up to. And I don't know if she ever did the same thing with me, but I would know when she was calling me on the phone. I would know when she wanted me to come up to the house and see her. She'd just have to think it, and I would hear it, and I would, follow commands. Or whatever. She wouldn't even have to pick up the phone. I'd sit, my mother would go, "Where are you going?" I go, "I'm running up to grandma's house." She goes, "Why?" We live next door to them, by the way, on a small farm. And she go, "Why are you going over there?" I said, "Oh, she needs me for something." And I'd run over there and she'd say, "Hey, take these eggs down to your mom," or whatever. But it was always like she wouldn't need to pick up the phone. She'd just have to think about me hard enough and I would show up. So, I just thought everybody was like that. And then when I was about 13 or 14, my other grandmother, my mother's mom, was the Italian residence in Portland, Oregon's a card reader. She was like a fortune teller. And she gave me a deck of cards, and they were just regular playing cards. And she kind of taught me how to do what she did. And out of 21 grandkids, I was the one she picked out. So I thought that was very interesting. Now that I look back on it, at the time I thought I was just the foolish one. My whole family's like, "Oh no, she's going to do it too. Oh no." And so my grandmother really tried, my mom's mom, the tarot card, or not the tarot card reader, but the regular card reader used to tell me, "You can do this, you're the only one, blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "Okay, whatever." And I ended up, when I was 14 years old, getting a rider deck, a rider tarot deck. And I became very well known in my area in Portland, Oregon, amongst all the kind of psychics and consciousness people, because this was back in the late 70s and early 80s. So, there wasn't much UFO stuff going on at the time, at least not in my world. There was MUFON and a few of the other scientific organizations, but not meetings and not things like that. So within the health communities and the spiritual communities, I would end up at these psychic fairs and things like that. And I'd do tarot card readings, and gosh, 90% of the time I was right on. I mean, I had people follow me around. I finally stopped doing it when I was in my late 20s because it became just too difficult for me. I was starting to take on people's stuff, and it was getting very, very hard for me to separate out their problems. And because I was correct most of the time, the problems I was having was they'd come to me for answers for all their
For
problems.
everything, yeah.
And Yeah, and I just said, you know what, I can't do this anymore. And I just basically said, that's it, not doing it again. So I stopped when I was about 28 years old doing that type of thing. And that was fine. And then my life goes on. Many things happen. I have a professional dance company. Things go forth. And still this strange and extraordinary experiences are still happening. And they really didn't come to a peak until about 2010, when I became very ill and almost died. And at that time, I lost my business. I lost everything I was doing. And I was laying in bed recuperating for 3 months. And then I said, you know, I'm not going to go back to regular business life. I can't do this anymore. I'm too old. I was 53 at the time. I said, I'm not doing this again. What do I love more than anything in the whole world? And I thought, oh, I love listening to Art Bell. I've been listening to him for over 20 years now, about 20 years. So what the heck, you know? I think I will start managing the people who speak on the Art Bell show. Little did I know, at the time I was managing people that were authors and speakers and keynote speakers and those type of people for corporations and conferences for big corporations and retreats and workshops. So I thought, oh, I can just take my skills and move them on over. And I was a conference producer for, you know, big time nonprofits, you know, 500, 600 people conferences. And so I thought, hey, I could just move on over into the UFO community. You know, what can I lose, right? Little did I know that this whole community is rife with, you know, poverty and lots of problems. Yeah.
Everyone gets in here thinking it's all sweet and dandy, and then you realize there's as much bitching and everything going on and money problems as there is in any field.
Oh, exactly. But, you know, it's 10 times compounded in this field because there's only so many of us. Yeah. I didn't realize this at the time. I thought, oh, it's an endless possibility, right? Because Ancient Aliens was on TV. I thought, well, you know, there's got to be a market for this, whatever. Turns out there's really not, because there's only so many people on the planet that are really tuned in and turned on, you know, as they say, as good old Timothy Leary used to say. But anyhow, so in 2010, I almost died. I decided I'm going to go into the UFO community. And at that time, Victoria Jack was producing the internet, it's called UFO, the Bay Area UFO Expo was what it was called. She'd been doing it for 10 years. She finally stopped in 2010. In 2011, I decided to take it on with a good friend of mine, Brian William Hall, who did Conspiracy Con, and we became the new producers of UFO Con. And everything was going great, and I started meeting people to manage them, and things are cooking, and, you know, there isn't much money at the time, but I thought, what the heck, you know, it'll eventually come. If I'm doing the right thing, it will. So I'm working in this field, and one day I'm listening to Carrie Cassidy's radio show, and a woman by the name of Acellaria Liberalis goes on the show and said something very extraordinary, and I just about fell off my chair thinking, oh my God, this woman has the answers to the universe. I want to manage her. She said this. She said, the gray aliens, with instructions from another being, she didn't say what it was, have put an energetic lock on our DNA so that we cannot break free and go to this ascended place that we all think we're going to head to, and that you're going to get 14 strands of DNA and you're going to live forever and all that stuff's going to happen. And she says, no, it's not going to happen, because they have done this to us, and it's an energetic lock. And my brain clicked in and went, oh my God, that makes so much sense. You know, because we're all force fields, we're all energy, we're all this light beings, you know, in our core essence. So why wouldn't they be able to do something on that level? And I thought, that's extraordinary. I got to call this woman. I finally called her. The second time I'm talking to her on the phone, and I'm making this short because we don't have a lot of time, but the second time I'm talking to her on the phone, I made a very spiritual, conscious decision. And it was like down to the core of my soul. I could feel it, Peter. It was like, I'm going to do this hell or high water, as they say, and I'm going to give all of myself to this cause, whatever this cause may be, and the heck with money, the heck with all that. It's not going to be about me anymore. It's going to be about getting to the truth, okay? So I made this very conscious spiritual decision while I'm on the phone talking to her, and I feel it. I feel it like in my body. The second I felt that, And I have to tell you guys, it just blew my mind. I'm feeling this overwhelming sensation in my body that I'm making a major decision in my life, and a helicopter is over the house in a fraction of a second, and I never heard it coming, and it's loud as heck, and it's practically shaking the house. It is, and I sent my roommate out to look at it because I was petrified. It kind of petrified. I was like, "What the heck's going on?" And he runs out and looks, and he says it's circling the house with the nose pointed down. There's two guys in it, bubble helmets, the whole bit. Can't see them. And they're just circling the house about 100, 150 feet up. They're really low. The house is shaking. I mean, it's crazy. And I'm like, what the heck? And Asa Laria heard it on the phone. And that's very important to the story, folks. She heard it. I held the phone up and she's hearing this. And I go, do you hear that? She goes, yeah, it's a helicopter. I said, yeah. And then about 30, 45 seconds later, they leave and I hear them leave. But I never heard them coming. Okay, so that was very odd, but I didn't think much of it at the time, and I didn't equate it to that feeling in my soul in the moment. It was very odd, but I just didn't, you know, I'm such what they call naive and kind of, you know, stupid about this stuff. It happens, and I go, oh, well, who cares, right? And I go on with my life, like I'll go make a cup of coffee and forget about it, right? I mean, it's just like, whatever. And so time passes. That was in May or June of 2011. It's now September of 2011. It's the September 22nd and 23rd. And Asa Laria decides to meet me at Kerry Cassidy and Bill Ryan's conference called Awake and Aware in Irvine, California. And she meets me down in LA, and we go to stay with a guy that has an Airbnb house in Anaheim, and we drive down to the conference. So it's Friday night. Now, I got to preface this with, all the way driving down to the conference from San Francisco, I'm thinking to myself, gee, I wonder how come nobody's put on a conference for the super soldiers. Oh God, I wish I'd never thought it. I swear, I sit here now and I go, why did I even think that? But I just thought, you know, nobody's ever done anything for these guys. You know, they're all victims of this horrible abuse by the government and black ops and the reptilians and God knows who, what else. And no one's helped them. And I thought, you know, I should do that. So that was in the back of my mind when I got there. Now, when I get there, I've also purchased a table, and Asa Laria is on that table. Joan Richards is on that table. Douglas Dietrich's on the table. I had three other people I was repping at the time. I had a whole bunch of people, like their pictures out and information about them, and I'm trying to get people to know about them, and I'm trying to get Carrie and Bill to start paying attention to them also. So I'm down there on a twofold mission. I'm down there to get their attention, to also find people for UFOCon to speak. And now in the back of my head, I'm thinking, oh, I need to talk to the super soldiers and see if they want to do a conference with me. So it's Friday night. Asa Laria and I are sitting there, and Duncan O'Finian and his girlfriend Axe are sitting on the stage. It's the first time she's ever spoken, and it was great because I got to kind of see them, you know, firsthand, close up, talking about their experiences. And halfway through her conversation with the audience, there's about 450 or 500 people in the room. It was packed. And she says to the room, and yes, I had this screaming in the back of my head all the time. And I just about fell off my chair, because in my 20s, I started meditating. And at one point, I started hearing a person screaming in the, you know, kind of like in the back of my head. And I thought, oh my God, this is terrible. Well, at the time it happened, I was seeing a therapist, and I told her, and she goes, well, Lauren, you told me about the time you were 18 months old and they pinned you down in this crib because you were going to bleed through your skin because you'd eaten so much rat poison that they were transfusing you and doing all these things. So she goes, it was probably you as a child screaming and crying in the crib, and it was post-traumatic stress disorder from that experience that you're experiencing in your head now as an adult. And all this time I thought, oh, that's a great explanation. I'll go with it, right? So I just never really paid attention to it anymore after that. And every once in a while, I'd be falling asleep and I'd hear it, and I'd be waking up every once in a while and I'd hear it, and I'd just go, oh, that was me as a kid. Okay, I got to deal with that someday on some level, subconsciously. So it is gone. So when she said that, I just thought, oh my God, maybe there's something more to this than I know. And it really freaked me out. And I'm looking around the room to see if anybody else is looking around the room, because I wanted to see if anybody else is having a reaction to this, right? And nobody's looking around the room, and it's just me. And I'm thinking, oh my God, something's really wrong here. I felt it kind of in the core of my being, like something's really wrong here. And I look at Acellaria when they're done, and I said, wow, wasn't that amazing? And she goes, yeah. She goes, I've got to talk to them because they have the answer to something I'm researching right now. And I looked at her, and I said, I don't want to talk to them. She goes, yes, you do. I said, no, I don't. I really don't. And so Friday night, we left, and we didn't talk to anybody. And then Saturday comes around, and she keeps bugging me all day. We got to go talk to Duncan and Miranda. And I'm thinking, well, okay, I'll eventually do it. It was starting to wear off, right, the whole impact of the screaming thing. And during the day, I went and talked to Aaron McCollum was there with his wife and his dog. I love his dog. And they said, yeah, we'd love to do a super soldier conference with you, but, you know, we can't really be on stage at the same time Duncan is, because we all don't get along. And I wish I had heard that part of the sentence real clearly when I started this whole process. And I said, well, that's cool. Don't worry about it. I said, we'll figure something out. And so I left them that day, and Saturday night, I'm trying to sneak out of the building without talking to Duncan and Miranda again. And I take Acellaria, and she goes, no, we've got to talk to him. I'm going, no, we're not talking to him. And so I think I'm being really smart, Peter. I sneak us out the back by the trash cans, by the swimming pool, out to the back parking lot, thinking I'm going to miss them. And guess where they're standing? Right on the other side of the trash can, smoking cigarettes. And I'm like, I walk up to him, and she runs up to Duncan, and she starts talking, and I start talking to Miranda, and I ask them about a conference, and they're like, yeah, we could probably do that. And then it kind of near the end of my conversation with Miranda, while Acellaria is talking to Duncan, I said to her, oh, by the way, what's with that screaming in your head? And she says, why are you asking? And I said, well, I think I've got it too. And Peter, she said the most amazing thing to me. And to this day, I thank her. I worship the ground she walks on for saying this, because she said to me, Lorian, maybe you don't want to know. And in that moment, I suddenly had the realization that I don't need to know. I don't even care what it was. If it was something horrible and horrific and they're using me for something, then, you know, so be it. You know, my future is right now. And the next day, and I'm in control of it. Nobody else is. So it gave me permission not to get all caught up in this whole super soldier mind control thing. And that was wonderful, because if she hadn't done that, the next 3 months would have been absolute hell for me. And I don't know if I would have ever come out of it that way. But luckily enough, I'm a very strong human. I'm very strong. I know who I am. I know what I'm doing. And if anybody's messed with me in my life, they obviously know that they're not going to be able to do it too easily, because I'm hard to kill, and and I'm very tenacious like a pit bull. So, you know, it's very difficult to get rid of me once I get going. So anyhow, it's Saturday night, and we go home after that. And I'm a little blown away by what she'd said to me. And I'm still thinking about Friday night and the screaming in the head and what's going on. But I'm not thinking too much about it. We get back to the house, and I sit on the edge of the bed. I say goodnight to Acellaria. She walks into the other room. I go into the room. I think I changed into my pajamas. I'm pretty sure I did. So what, 2 minutes go by, I sit on the edge of the bed, I pop open my laptop, and I think to myself, I wonder if Acellaria remembers the day the helicopter appeared over my house. And in thinking that, Peter, I swear to God, there is a helicopter over that house in Anaheim, as loud as the last one, and I'm freaking out. Now I'm like, what the heck? Because I just thought it. That's all I did, is I just thought it. And suddenly this thing is there loud as heck, and I never heard it coming, and the whole bit, right? And so this time I decided I'm going to go look at it. Even though it's dark outside, I figured I could see some lights or something, right? So I walk to the window at the house. I look out the window, and up above me to about 70-degree angle, maybe 60-degree angle in the sky, are three orange glowing red ember lights in a triangle formation. There is no helicopter, and it's stationary. It's not moving. And I'm thinking to myself, what the heck is going on here? And I kind of went into shock. I think at that moment, I saw these three lights. I'm staring at them. I can't make out what's happening. There's no helicopter that I can see. I can't see anything, but I'm hearing this thing as loud as day. I back up away from the window, and then the helicopter takes off and leaves. But I don't know. There was no helicopter out there. And, you know, days later, months later, years later, I now look back on that. And I think, because I asked everybody the next day, I said, oh, my God, did you guys hear that helicopter? And everybody said, no, we didn't hear anything. And they had to have. They couldn't have been asleep in 3 minutes. You know, yeah. I'm just like, there's no way they could not have heard that. So now I'm starting to realize, you know, then and later and even now that they put that sound in my head. Whoever they are, whoever was in that ship, and I'm pretty sure it was a triangle spacecraft. Now, whether it was a secret space program or them or who knows what, I have no idea who it was because I didn't get any feelings from it. I just freaked out that it was a triangle, red balls of light in a triangle instead of the helicopter being out there. And all I did was I just backed up and went to bed.
Was there anything in between the lights when you're looking up? Could you tell it was a structure or was it just three separate lights?
No, it was three separate lights in a triangle formation. And I, honest to God, it was so dark out there, I couldn't tell if there was anything in it, yeah. You know, in the center. So it could have been a helicopter, but if it was, then how come nobody heard it?
Yeah.
That's the part that really bothers me, so... Anyhow, so this is Saturday night. Now, we're going back to the conference Sunday morning. And, of course, now the screaming's happened. The helicopter and the lights have happened. And I'm thinking, no, but nothing else could happen this weekend. That's just enough for me, right? But no, it gets even more bizarre. So I end up talking to Bill Ryan, and Carrie's busy, so she couldn't talk to me, and she ended up talking to Asa Laria, and I needed to talk to Bill about somebody else I was repping. And I walk up to Bill right when Sean David Morton got finished speaking, and there was a kid, I thought was a young kid, kneeling down in front of Bill with his arms outstretched, and Bill was sitting in a chair, and they were both holding on to this cube. And they were meditating together. And I thought, oh, this is extraordinary. So I started meditating with them. And then a few minutes later, we all open our eyes and everything's great. And I look at Bill and Bill says, hi. And I said, I'm Lori. And he goes, oh, hi. Because I'd been in contact and he needed to talk to me anyhow. So we were going to talk. But this kid pops up and it's not a kid. It's like a 20-something-year-old person, which I found out later was in his early 30s, looked very young. And he says to me, hi, I'm James Rink. I'm a super soldier. And I heard you're putting on a conference for us. And I said, where did you hear that? He goes, well, I've been talking to people here at the conference, and they all said you're going to do something. And I said, okay, well, I'll tell you what, let's talk about it. Because, you know, at this point, I'm like, what is going on? I'm not sure I want to do any of this, but whatever. I said, meet me at my table in a half an hour, and we'll talk about it. And he goes, okay. And he takes off with his cube, and Bill Ryan and I talk, and I forgot to go back to the table and meet up with him. So later in the evening, it's like 6 or 7 o'clock at night. I can't remember when the conference ended. I'm back at the table. We're packing up, and Asa Laria starts talking. And two people walk in front of the table and stop, and I can see that while I'm looking down. And Asa Laria starts talking to one of them, and it turns out to be James. He's come back to the table to talk to us. And I look up, and there's a guy standing in front of me, and I swear to God, Peter, it was like deja vu, like 500 million times strong. I looked up, and I knew this guy. I knew him, and the first words out of my mouth to him were, oh, my God, I know you. And I said, "Do you know me?" And he looked at me and said, "No, I don't." And I said, "That's okay." Because I was so freaked out by the whole weekend. I thought, you know what? It's probably better he doesn't recognize me. And I just had this feeling like I'd known this guy forever and ever. And we'd been together in lifetimes and lifetimes. And it was just like so strong. And he was very young, and I'm very old, so I thought, well, that's not happening, you know, whatever it was or is, it certainly not, it didn't happen this lifetime, right? And so I'm thinking, this is very strange. So we all start talking, we're having a good time, we're talking about all kinds of stuff, super soldiers and aliens, and you know, so we're having a great time. And I said, why don't you guys come to dinner? So I called the guy at the house in Anaheim and said, can we come over and have dinner there till late in the morning? He goes, sure, I'll even cook it for you and leave it out. So he did. He is wonderful. And we all went up there and we started talking, and we talked till like 3 o'clock in the morning when they finally left. And Max and I, during this whole conversation, James was talking quite a bit to Solaria, and I was talking to Max, and we started talking about Nazis.
Was
and
Max mind Spears, was it?
Yes, it yeah, was. Yeah. It was Max Spears. And we're talking mind control, we're talking super soldiers, we're talking all kinds of stuff. We're talking Nazis, we're talking MK Ultra, we're talking about Arizona Wilder and Kathy O'Brien, and just, you know, we go on and on. But as the night progresses, the more we talked about Satanism and Nazis and mind control, every time we brought up those subjects, I would start getting sick to my stomach. And I kept thinking, what is going on? Why is it that every time we talk about this, I have a hard time speaking and I get sick to my stomach? I thought, that's interesting. So they finally leave. I go to bed, and this is where everything blew apart for me. The next morning, I start to wake up, and I had and people say, how do you know it wasn't a dream? Well, I know it wasn't a dream, folks, because of the way it played out. It was more like I was there. I was living it. It was more like an awake dream or an out-of-body experience. I don't know how to describe it, but it was like I was there, and it had happened. And what happened was, I'm suddenly in a room with Max, and of course we're naked and we've been doing the nasty or whatever, but it was more than that. It was this feeling of love that where you're kind of melted, your souls are melted together, and there's no time and no space. And I don't know how to describe it to people, except for, to me, it's like the true conscious love or whatever is on the other side that God controls, whatever this love may be. Or maybe other aliens have this type of environment or consciousness within their souls. I don't know. But we were experiencing this, and it was absolutely profound, and it was amazing, and there's nothing like it on this planet. And I had experienced, and Peter knows this, I had experienced a time where some entity stood by the side of my bed and it just stroked my forehead very lightly, and I was propelled to a place of absolute love and beauty. And they wouldn't let me remember any of it. All I know is I came back and I tried to kill myself because I wanted to be there. And that was back when I was in my very early 30s. So this was very akin to that feeling I had with Max. So I thought it was very profound, but the scene changed very quickly. And it changed into a really horrific scene. And I can't go into a lot of detail, folks, because it's got a lot of sex and drugs and rock and roll, as they say. But it's the next thing I know, I'm naked and I'm sitting in a wooden chair, and it's got wheels on the bottom of it, and I'm strapped into this thing, and I'm being rolled up into this room that's like a dormitory, and Max is having sex with another woman. And all I can tell everybody about it is there is a guy in a uniform in the back of the room. It's all black uniform. I can't make out any insignias or nothing on it. And Max is looking at me with this so sorrowful look on his face that it broke my heart. But at the same time, I'm screaming. And what's even weirder, and I tell people this, I said, don't judge me for this. This is what happened. Please don't judge me for this. But I can feel everything Max is doing. I can feel it through his body, which I found really bizarre. And it took me months to figure out what this was all about. But anyhow, so that was, I think, the point where I hear the screaming in my head. is from that incident. And what's even more bizarre about this whole incident is that I was 17 and I knew I was 17 in this, and I knew that Max was 22. In this life, I'm 20 years older than he is. I was 53 and he was 33 when we met. So what is this? Now, years later, I mean, I came out of that. I was a wreck. It took me 3 hours of crying. I had to drive a Solari to San Francisco and I cried halfway up in the car. And I was a mess. I couldn't even tell her what was going on. And it took me 3 months to be able to talk to Max, because Max and I became very good friends at that time. And we were talking almost daily about all of his experiences and other super soldiers' experiences, and trying to figure out how we were going to relate them at the conference. Where I finally, for the first conference I did hold for the Super Soldiers, I brought an MFT up on stage, a marriage and family therapist, to interview each of the Super Soldiers for about a half an hour each. So they had guidance through their stories that didn't make it sound so fantastical that nobody would believe them.
Yeah.
So that's how we ended up doing it. But for 3 months after that experience happened to me, I couldn't even tell Max what had happened to me. It took me almost, I think it was much later than that even. I think it was 6 months later I told him what had happened. And we agreed at that time that I wouldn't talk about it for a while. And I didn't. I didn't talk about it for up until last year, as a matter of fact. So it was 3 years I didn't tell anybody what had happened. And so it's a very different world, like I said, that I got propelled into this. Because what has happened is I realized that there is an alien agenda behind this. There's Satanism behind this. There's the MyLabs people might be behind all this. I mean, I'm not sure, you guys, who actually is behind all this. But it's opened up so many doors for me. And I tell people, now I'm come out the other end. It's 5 years later about. And I've come out the other end, or 4 years later. Come out the other end about what my feelings are about everything. I absolutely believe in my heart now that that was a projected vision that only was for me, about something that they wanted me to experience and understand, whoever they is, whether it's aliens or the Satanist or the MyLabs people or whatever. Somebody took me to a place in a very close dimension. Well, I was in an alpha state or whatever, dream state or whatever it could be, and physically put my astral body there and made this experience happen for me. Because I don't think Max has ever had this experience. He doesn't have any memory of this type of thing. So I think it was just for me, and I thought it, and now I think it was a lesson for me. But I don't know. So there we are. It's just, you know, it's all a mystery. I have no idea what's going on. I have seen a UFO on 11-1 of 2014. I was going, this is another Peter where I was going to quit. I had made a decision, you know, after 4 years of being entrenched into this world, I finally said, that's it. I'm going to quit. I'm going to quit MUFON. I'm going to quit my radio shows. I'm going to quit producing conferences. I'm going to stop, you know, doing any of this ever again. And it was 11-1-2014. And I said, that's it, not doing it. And I was driving to my MUFON meeting, and I made a very spiritual, conscious decision where I actually felt it in my body again. That's it. You know, in other words, I was connecting with my higher self or some self out there, and I knew that was it. I was done. I was going to quit. That was it. I was done. So the word got out to whatever other dimensional beings are out there. They knew that Lauren was quitting, right? So I go to my meeting. Everything's great. After the meeting, we all go to dinner, and my friend Javier says to me, hey, I just got a new night vision goggle. Let's go and look at the stars. And I said, no, I don't want to. I want to go home. He goes, why do you want to go home? You never go home. I go, no, I want to go home tonight. And he goes, okay. He goes, well, then he starts talking to everybody else, and they decide they're going to go back to the senior center where I hold the meetings and do the skywatch in the parking lot. And I said, no, you guys can't do that without me, because the police patrol that parking lot. And if you do that, you don't have a key to the senior center and you're not the person putting on the meetings, they're going to kick you out and throw you in jail or whatever. And he goes, well, you come with us. I said, okay, fine, I'm coming with you. So I begrudgingly go to the Skywatch. they're all standing there looking. It's cold. It's November. I'm cold. I want to go home. I've got my arms crossed. And Diane, a good friend of mine, standing next to me. We're standing back from the group. And they're all looking in this goggle up at the sky, straight up. And they're all talking and whatever. And I'm standing back there with her. And I said, we'll never see anything. And sure enough, the second I said that, a giant triangle, black triangle UFO with lights in three corners dematerializes right above us. And I'm like, what the heck? And this thing is, it's not, I can't tell how big it was, Peter, but from an arm's distance, it was the size of my hand.
Yeah.
So it was pretty low, pretty big, I got to say. I mean, it was huge. For us, it was huge. I mean, it was like down there, I could see it, you know, it was right above the trees. And we're screaming, UFO, UFO. And everybody's looking in the goggle up at the sky straight up. And they're not looking down low and seeing this huge craft. And I thought to myself, I thought, my God, it's the guy flying it doesn't know what he's doing because it's wobbling so bad. It was doing this like wobble thing. And then it started to move forward and it stopped wobbling. And then it just turns solid black. All the lights went off. And then it took off at speeds beyond belief. It was like unbelievable how fast it took off. And I looked at Diane and I said, did you see that? She goes, yeah, I saw it. I said, oh my God. And then I was sucked back in. And I got to tell you now, Peter, I saw those three orange lights in the sky in 2011, and they could or could not have been a UFO. I have been waiting my entire life since I was 13 years old when I first started calling to them to take me home. I said, I saw my first UFO, and I'm not thrilled. I'm pissed. I went home and I was really angry because I thought, you know, I make a decision to leave and then you guys show yourself to me like that. I mean, how nasty is that? It's just like, you know, no, you really can't go anywhere yet. We've got work for you to do, you know, and it's like they're not paying me. So, I mean, it's like, why is it their decision? Anyhow, so all my friends are bugging me now because they keep saying, well, so you saw your first UFO. They did it on a day you were actually going to quit, never come back. And now you're back into it again. You know, you can always quit. So, you know, I guess I could always quit if I wanted to. So well, let's see what happens next.
And then we all of a sudden get steered back into it. There's always something that happens just to get you back into it. But there is the free will component.
There is. So what do you do about that? I mean, I'm sitting here going, you know, like I said, there isn't any money coming in for this. I just lose money left hand over fist, basically. And I'm putting on an amazing conference, though. And I sure hope that your audience really, I mean, if they're in the States and you guys are listening to this, you've got to come to this conference. I just can't afford to lose any more money. If you guys would help me break even, I'd be thrilled. But this conference, Peter, is one of a kind. It's the first one like it. And what we're doing at this conference is called UFOCon, the Experiencer event. It's in Sacramento, California on October 24th and 25th. And you can find out about it at CA for California, caufocon.com. And what we're doing there is I'm breaking out these experiencer groups. I go to all these conferences, Peter, and they have these giant experiencer groups where everybody piles in. There's like 150 people in there. They're all sharing their experiences, and they have experiences all the way from I've seen a spacecraft to the reptilians are having sex with me every night. You know, it goes
the whole gamut.
It goes, yeah, the whole gamut. And I'm sitting there going, well, this is truly interesting, but how are they going to get down to the nitty gritty for each one of these 200 people sitting in this room? So what we're doing is we're breaking out three experiencer groups in the morning on Sunday and three on Sunday night, and they will each be specific to whatever, you know, we've come up with. And what we've come up with is people who have never seen anything in their entire life that are just drawn to the whole UFO community and want to know more about it. And then we have the people who have just seen a spacecraft. And then we have people who have been dealing with the grays and the reptilians and the abduction kind of scenarios where you get the baby and the ovum and the sperm are taken and the reptilians are, you know, bullying you and, you know, those kind of relationships. Then we've got one for the people who see like ascended masters and angels and Nordics and more human type experiences, contact. And then we're thinking about having the last two groups be for people who have had extremely positive experiences and people who are dealing with the more negative experiences. And then the positive people can share, you know, all their information about the good news they're getting from their contact. And the negative people, hopefully we can help them figure out a way not to be so upset and stressed out about their contact. You know, hopefully we can come up with some answers for them.
And that's in October.
Yeah, October 24th and 25th in Sacramento, California. It's going to be extraordinary. And this is the first time this has ever been done. And alongside that, we're having all these speakers that are experiencers. And one of them is not quite an experiencer. It's Victor Camacho. Have you ever heard of Victor?
No, I haven't.
Oh, he's amazing. He is a Spanish radio announcer or Mexican radio announcer who speaks Spanish, of course. And he's been around for years and years doing research like Jaime Maussan and those type of people. And he has been around a lot of experiencers. So he wants to share his experience being like a radio talk show host and researcher and what it's like for him to deal with experiencers. So that'll be kind of fun. That'll be a little twist on it. But the rest of them are all, you know, experiencers like yourself, like Sherry Wilde's going to be there. Barbara Lamb is going to be there. Nadine Lalich is going to be there. Oh, and we have a guy coming out for the very first time ever speaking because he's a friend of mine. And he finally said, look, whatever you want, Lorian, I'll do it. He's got extraordinary stuff. This guy lives in Petaluma, California, right up the road from me. He's had experiences his entire life. He's had UFOs land in his front yard on many an occasion. He is having some really bizarre incidents happen. I can't talk about them because he wants to talk about it for the very first time ever at the conference about what he's discovered about what they're doing with him. And he is from, he descends from royal families, which is very interesting too, because I have another friend who's an experiencer who also is a extreme contactee, to the point of craziness where reptilians are appearing in his house all the time and grays and what have you. And he is also a descendant of a royal family. And these people seem to have some kind of very deep connection that goes way back in their bloodline that I'm following right now with my little bit of research into the two of them. And I'm trying to find out if other people who are descendants from very royal bloodline European families are having these same experiences. And it might go far to helping those out there that think in the whole, you know, mind control MK Ultra community that the Queen Mother is a reptilian. I mean, you know, who knows? We may be getting closer to that than we think. So very interesting stuff going on out there. And so that's my story, Peter. It's not the greatest, you know, alien contact story, but I've had a lot of very fun and beautiful experiences with my dead boyfriend. I've had, like I said, a house appeared to me when I was 8 years old that from a past life, and I saw it absolutely perfectly, you know, on the road. And I had a girlfriend with me. She was 8 or 9 at the time too. She never spoke to me after that because I kept yelling, do you see it? Do you see the house? And she kept looking at me like I was out of my mind. And what was even more interesting about that experience was that there was a package on the mailbox, and that is the whole reason I looked over to this house. And it said Sir Richard Lamb on it, and it was wrapped in twine, and it had just kind of paper, like butcher block paper around it, very old styled wrapping. And I thought to myself, well, this is out of place. What is this doing here? That's odd. And I kept reading it, Sir Richard Lamb. I kept thinking, what is that all about? Years later, I had a past life vision when I met my boyfriend at the time, and his name was Richard Lamb. And I thought, oh, that's crazy. And it turned out that, you know, I had this whole past life vision. Now, what's interesting about past lives, and I don't know how to say this and sound sane when I'm saying it, but I think that all past lives are actually happening simultaneously.
Oh, yeah, that's and I think using past life or future life is just a reference for those getting into all this, because if you go straight there, they're just not going to get it.
Exactly. And, you know, I had a very wonderful woman give me a quote unquote past life regression. Halfway through the regression, she goes, "Oh, you know, you're just living all this right now." I went, "Are you kidding?" She goes, no, you'll understand that." She goes, "I don't tell very many people that because they can't grasp it, but you're actually living this right now." And she goes, "The bleed over between Sir Richard Lamb of this other lifetime and you seeing the house was just the fact that you're psychic enough to see what was going on in that moment at that time in Europe in the 16th or 17th century, you know?" And I said, "Oh, okay, cool. I get it now." So the whole thing that happened to me with him was happening on two different timelines at the same time.
Same time, yeah.
Yeah. And what's even funnier about that is I was watching the Wolfman. Do you remember the Dracula and Wolfman? Do they have that in Australia?
No.
The black and whites with Lon Chaney?
No, not that I know of.
Oh, God. Well, that's a whole era of fun, I'm telling you. In the 40s and 50s, I think even into the 60s, they were making the Wolfman and Dracula, and Lon Chaney Jr. was all the parts of this. Anyhow, I'm a kid. I'm about 7 or 8 at the time also, and I'm watching the Wolfman for the very first time. It's black and white, and they show all the tombstones, and it turns out that the family that turns into the Wolfman all the time, their name was Talbot, T-A-L-B-O-T. And I looked at the headstone of one of his dead relatives as he was howling at the moon by it, and it said, blah, blah, Talbot. And I said, I looked at my sisters, which are like 3 and 4 at the time, and I say, "I'm going to marry the Wolfman." And they're like, God, you know, they're looking at me. They're all little kids. They don't know what I'm talking about. And I just kept saying, "I'm going to marry the Wolfman. I'm going to marry the Wolfman." And I'd say that all the time. And I said it for years. I remember saying it all the time. And so crazy enough, I'm 29 years old or 28 years old, and I meet a guy by the name of Dennis Talbot, and he turns out to be my first husband. So I thought that was extraordinary, too, that I just, you know, predicted who my first husband's last name was going to be when I was 6 years old. And when I met him, I again had another extreme flashback about another lifetime that I thought was a past life at the time, but now I know it was an extreme life going on at the same time where I was with him as well. So it's very odd, you know, just, you know, popping in and out of dimensions and timelines is kind of difficult. But I think a lot of people have had these experiences, and I think they all relate to the alien agenda, if we want to call it that, in some way. Because every time I think about my psychic experiences or the super soldier mind control stuff or anything, somehow the aliens seem to pop in there. And they show them, you know, they show the ship, or something happens where I see three lights in the sky in a triangle formation, or, you know, I haven't had a visitation yet. I'm waiting for that next. I think I'm ready. But I don't know what they'd visit me about, except for maybe saying, "Well, you know, you're overdrawn at the Universal Bank account. You owe us," or something. I don't know. But anyhow, so Peter, my life has been an interesting, you know, bag of beans, as they say. I don't know how to sort it all out. And, you know, frankly, I don't really want to, and I don't really care, because, you know, I've got enough on my plate without having to worry about all the crazy things that have happened to me. But one great thing about it is I can look at other people's stories, and I can kind of see where if they're having real trouble with it, like if they just can't grasp why this is happening and they feel terrible about it or something's going on, I can usually get right to the core of the matter and help them realize that, you know, if it's something bad, it really isn't bad. It's just how you're thinking about it. You just got to change how you're thinking about it, and it will become easy for you, and life will be good. Just got to do that.
Yeah, they're creating the issue themselves.
Absolutely. And you know what's even weirder is now that I'm old, I'm going to be 58 pretty soon. I'm so excited. Can't wait till I'm 60. Now that I'm the age I am and what I've been through my entire life, I finally realized that I am causing all this. That I'm really the holographic blueprint for everything I create around me. So me meeting you and me meeting all the people on the Art Bell show and becoming friends with all the alien people on the planet and all the conspiracy people on the planet and all this, you know, it's just, it's my tribe. And part of my holographic imprint here on this planet is that we all find each other for some reason. And I think it may be that we all vibrate at a different frequency than most of the rest of the planet. I'm not sure what it is, but all I know is when I talk to you or Mary or Stephen Bassett even and Jordan Maxwell and our good buddy up in Colorado, gosh, it's Adam, Stan. If I talk to any of these people in any different part of the whole ball of wax I call the consciousness community, because I think the UFO people, the conspiracy people, that all of it, they're all in the same community. Even the patriots that I deal with up here in the United States, they understand that there's a higher consciousness at play here and that we're all finding each other and we're all making a big difference on this planet of waking people up. I think that's the bottom line, you know?
Well, it must be pretty full on for yourself. Like, I've talked to others and I know that, not from personal experience, but I know setting up conferences and doing that type of thing is such a full on job that you're very lucky to even break even, because a lot of people that I know, they actually lose out and they do this for the passion of getting the information out, which is why you also do the meetings and you got your own show as well. So there's got to be a lot of drive on your part to do what you do, because there is so much work behind the scenes that nobody's got a friggin' idea unless they're a part of helping to get these events going. So obviously there's that huge drive there for you to do what you do.
It is. It's really a calling. And like I said, ever since I almost died, and I do believe that they, whoever they are that are trying to stop all of us getting the word out about the consciousness on this planet and that we're actually in charge, you know, we're breaking their mind controls, basically what we're doing, Peter, is we're saying we're not going to follow your exact orders, we're not going to go to school, we're not going to take vaccines, we're not going to put up with chemtrails, you know, we're not putting up with any of this stuff that they, whoever they are, is putting on us. I believe that they can see the future. I absolutely believe that in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know if you know about the yellow cube. It was brought up many a time through the conspiracy community and also the UFO community.
Apparently found in the Roswell craft, which was the Orions coming back from the future.
Supposedly. And this is, yeah, this is all, you know, like we may never know the answer to all this. We don't even know if the yellow cube exists. And apparently it wasn't really a cube. It was something like a book that they could look into and see the future, projected futures.
Somehow they were able to, they say, back engineer, and this is where they got some of the Stargate or the teleportation or that technology for being able to travel time and space or whatever.
Absolutely. That's what they say. So anyhow, I believe that at some point they know all about you. They know all about me. They know all about everybody in the UFO community that's even making a wave here or there. Not that I'm a big name or anything that matter, because I'm nobody, but everyone's connected. Still, yeah, we're all connected. And I did put on the Super Soldier events and they absolutely hated that, Peter. Whatever I did, I really made them angry. So I believe that they tried to kill me in 2010, because what I didn't tell you about that illness is that they never figured out what was wrong with me, and they isolated me for 2 weeks. And the doctor who looked at my x-rays a year later said, "Oh my God, this doesn't look like pneumonia. This looks like something man-made. It looked like someone had stuffed popcorn in my lungs."
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. Very weird stuff. So I just, to this day, I was freaked out about when I figured that out. But Peter, since then, I have really, I got down on my knees and prayed a lot. And whoever is protecting me now is doing a very good job of it. They're keeping me hidden from whoever the theys are and all that. And I feel very protected and I feel very positive and I feel very, very happy, actually. I have no complaints, no worries. And, you know, I just don't worry about it. Whatever I'm doing, Yeah, but I know they're keeping tabs on me. I know that for a fact because they monkey. Have I told you that I've gone into my computer a couple times at 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning when they think I'm in bed and I'm watching them poke around in my computer?
No,
Where,
no.
oh yeah, I've had some very bizarre stuff happen to me along the lines of Stan, actually.
We've had that happen here a few times. Me and Sol wake up to the computer turning on.
Yeah,
Because
that's what they do.
my bed's behind this thing here. It's the only place I can sort of get the quietness and all that to be able to do the shows and the work that I do. And yeah, it doesn't surprise me that you've got that going on too.
Yeah, I think we all do. All of us who are out there making a splash or a wave, or even just interviewing people that may have a piece to the puzzle, they don't like it. Whoever, like again, the quote unquote, who are they? Because I don't know who they are, but somehow they've decided that they don't like what I'm doing. But that's okay because I'm happy and everything's good.
It's all good. Now, you've also got, is it the mind control conference you're holding? Is it next year? Is that also something
I'm
you're doing?
thinking about it. Yeah, this is the one that I just, when I'm going to do it, I just kind of announce it and do it
Yeah.
because the problem again is the last time I had it, they attacked us by making up a false accusation against the whole group of people in the conference. And they sent security guards in there and they started attacking me. And then they told me I couldn't ever rent the place again because of the people that were at my conference. And I said, "Are you serious?" And they said, "Yes, we don't, you can't have them, we can't have you or your people here ever again because they disturbed our operators and our switchboard." And I was like, "No, they didn't. I don't, anyhow, it's a long story, but they fabricate things and then they send in security officers to talk to me and I just like, what's going on?" So every time I do something, it's very crazy what they do to backlash at me. And what I have noticed is that I've basically been blackballed out of Las Vegas. I can't rent a spot for this event. They don't seem to want me there anymore. So we're working on it. We're thinking about how we're going to do it. But like I said, if we do it, we're going to announce it like, 8 weeks ahead of time and go for it. And
So most of what you do is in California area, would that be right?
Las Vegas and California.
All right,
Yeah,
yeah.
Northern California and Las Vegas up until this year because, like I said, I can't book a place in Las Vegas. If I say my name, I get put on hold and then they come back that they can't, it's booked.
Yeah. And you grew up in
And
Portland, Oregon, is that right?
that is
Yeah.
correct.
Well, there
Yes, I
actually
love
recently.
Portland. Oh, were you?
Yeah,
You were
we
in
went to
Portland?
James's Ranch for a while as well. So I'll tell you what, we got into Portland and just the energy was awesome. Like, 'cause we had to go to LA first, and then we got out of Portland and went towards Trout Lake. And geez,
Isn't
that's
it beautiful?
oh God, the pine trees are friggin' huge. Everything's green. The water's actually like got a tinge of blue to it 'cause it's glacial water. It was just
Isn't
stunning
it?
part of the
Yeah.
country.
It is. It's the most beautiful place on the planet. And someday I may go back. It just depends. And who knows? But it's beautiful. And I'm thinking about now, this is something I don't usually talk about, Peter, but since I'm on your show, I'm going to talk about it. What I'm planning on doing, and this, I think this is what I am being called to do. I think this is the bottom line here. I am going to start a retreat center. And I don't want to call it a UFO retreat center because it won't just be UFOs. It's going to be for everything kind of paranormal and based on UFO research as well. And it will have a big conference center on it, but it'll also have living quarters for people that have been in the community for a long time that are seniors, that have nowhere to live and nothing to this is my home and this is my money and blah blah blah, because there's a very large contingency of speakers, authors, and researchers who have nothing in this community and people don't know about them. I know who they are. I know there's more than I ever suspected. And oh yeah, I mean, people are sleeping on couches, and they're in their 60s and there's no reason for that. and it's crazy. So I want to build some kind of, you know, senior retirement center on there for these people who have dedicated their life to either the conspiracy community, the UFO community, you know, they were a super soldier and now they've been tossed out and they got nowhere to go and nothing to do. And, you know, I mean, it's just, it's appalling to me that in our community, these people are being treated the way they are in their old age, you know. It's basically like, yeah, tell us your whole story and your whole life and then go around on the circuit and go broke. And then guess what? You get to live on the streets with the rest of the vets.
Yeah.
You know, it's really sad. So that's my goal. That's what I really want to do. And I'm thinking of ways very, you know, what they call that, adventurous and interesting ways to get this property to be able to build this kind of center. And I've got a lot of people that want to help do it. So it's going to be very interesting if I can pull it together. And I think that's what my job is. Yeah, yeah, it's going to be very interesting.
We've actually started up the Australian eSETI Center here.
Well, yeah, so I was wondering about that. So what are you guys doing in that regard?
Basically, we're doing what we already do. Consol does aura drawings and readings and a whole different range of different types of therapies. I do guided sessions and the Sky Watches and workshops, and we're doing webinars and seminars together. So we've got the eSETI Australia Centre now, and basically we're trying to go, like, make it a little bit bigger, and basically we're just doing it under the umbrella of, you know, the eSETI name. Like, I was over there hanging out with James, and he said, you should just open up an eSETI in Australia, and I was just like, really? And he's like, why not? You know, I'm already doing all this, and just under that name, and I've brought other people in with it, so basically... Number one mandate's to make public awareness on, you know, there's other realities. Number two is to help people connect to those in a positive way. Number three is to share wisdom and knowledge, and also different types of things, from whether it's health, food, technology, basically going through the whole gamut of where people in each area can share their knowledge and wisdom and start to work on things, so as we move forward with a high level of consciousness, we've got sort of a blueprint as a community to start with.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's very important. That's exactly what we're going to be doing up at the retreat center. We're going to have the Earth Defense Headquarter, which is Joanne Richards and Mark Richards' nonprofit.
Yeah.
And you know about Mark, right? The guy who's been in prison for the last 30 years, that Joanne talks about his amazing encounters with extraterrestrials before he was thrown in jail. I'm sure you know about him.
Yeah.
And if you don't, that's okay. But their group is called Earth Defense Headquarters, and they want to have a research library in there for the type of UFO encounters that Mark has had, and start a library and a research area. So we're going to have that. We also are thinking about bringing in some scientific researchers, and we're thinking about having a building just for them. Yeah. To do some maybe DNA testing, maybe implant testing, you know, anything that we can come up with to help, you know, solve issues, maybe bone testing. You know, it's just hard to do all that, and it's so unaffordable for most researchers.
Yeah,
you know, if
definitely.
They find a bone or a skull, they say, oh my God, this is extraterrestrial. Where do they go to even have it taken care of, you know? And then it costs a fortune to do it. So maybe we can figure out some way to have a lab on property.
Definitely.
To help these people out.
You've got to have whoever's best for the job. And that's my motto, is just, you know, get a group going, and whoever's best for whatever job or task comes up, that's who's got the job.
Exactly. That's what we're going to do. We just, right now, we're just working on trying to get the land together and make sure it happens, and make sure we have that conference center on there, because to me, it's super important that we have a place where people can all get together and meet and see each other eye to eye. I say this all the time on my show. The most important thing to me is, I mean, I love Skype. Don't get me wrong. I think Skype's great. But I think there's a real magic that happens when people get their energetic body fields together. It changes a lot of things for people on a real consciousness, physical level. Whereas if they're, you know, 3,000 miles away watching it on a TV screen, it doesn't have the same effect.
Definitely.
And there's something that happens when people are projecting with their mind out to a crowd and they're talking about certain issues, and if they repeat them in different ways, people are impacted to the point where it changes their life in that moment. And I've had several people come up to me and say, you know, you're so right about that. If I had not gone to that conference and not heard that one person say that one sentence at that conference, my life would not be where it is today. You know,
Hear that
and
all
it's
too often.
insane. Yeah, it's so crazy that the way it happens. And you know, it happened for me that way when I was at Awake and Aware in 2011, and Miranda said that one sentence. I hear the voice screaming in the back of my head all the time. It changed everything for me from that moment on. And then that whole weekend, I was open to whatever was happening to wake me up, to get me to do what I needed to do now. So I think everybody has that moment, and it just depends on where you are and who's the one that gets through to you, because we're all on different
Yeah,
frequencies.
definitely,
Yeah.
definitely.
So
We'll
very
wrap it up
cool.
there. Thank you so much for being on the show, and a bit different for, instead of me being on yours, but it's been absolutely awesome because,
It's been wonderful. Well,
I've had a good
thank you
time.
so much. And everybody, if you could check out caufocon.com. That's the website for the conference. And Peter, I wish you could be there. I tried to have you at the last one, but the Skype was just not cooperating that day. There was no way I could get you in, but we'll try to get you in for April. How's that sound? Yeah,
Whatever I can do,
perfect.
just let me know.
Okay, sweetie. Take care and thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
No worries, and there'll be links. The links that you sent me will be under this video, so everyone can go and check out everything there.
Great. Thank you, dear.
Thank you
Have a
very
good
much.
one.
Take it easy. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.